Hello. It has been a hot minute since I have recorded on this podcast. This episode is actually from 2020. It is now 2022, so it's been a minute, but still this information is all relevant and definitely useful for designers out there, creatives, anyone who is looking to start their own business. So yeah, I hope you enjoy and thank you for listening. Brianna, thank you so much for coming on my podcast.
Yes, thanks for having me.
We literally just discussed if it was Brianna or Brianna, and I totally just slipped. But yes, thank you so much for coming on. I'm so excited to talk and chat with you. So for anyone who doesn't know, Bree is the face or the voice you'll be hearing behind Brighton Made on Instagram. And yeah, we're just going to chat about everything from transitioning from 9 to 5, using Instagram as your way to attract clients, and then whatever else we come up with. So I think let's start off by you introducing yourself, your current job title, where you went to school, if you went to school for design even. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so like she said, I'm Bree, and I started Brighton Made a few years ago while I was working in the corporate world. My first job out of college was for Better Homes and Gardens magazine, and in college, I went to Iowa State University, and I studied graphic design there. And throughout college, I had just like a number of different internships, and I also studied abroad in Italy, and yeah, I just kind of always knew I wanted to do graphic design or something creative related. And yeah, now I'm doing it today full time, which is super exciting.
That's awesome. I didn't know you studied abroad. I also studied abroad. I went to the UK for a semester.
Oh, really? Yes. No, hands down, like probably my favorite experience in college was studying abroad. So it was just so cool just to see, like, I don't know, like I'm very inspired by different places and traveling. And so getting to like, I just love Europe and getting to experience all of that and live in Italy and like have to learn like design in another, you know, country was just like so eye-opening and yeah, an awesome experience.
Oh, so you were taking design classes there?
Yes. Yep. So my college actually had a campus in Rome for the design program because we had a whole like design college, and so like architecture students would go there, interior and graphic, but yeah, and then our professors would actually come over with us, which was super cool. But then at some points they would bring in like Italian professors, just like that was a whole other thing. But yeah, it was a really cool experience doing design. So yeah, I feel like most places like you study abroad for like a language or like something like history or something else, but so it's cool to do design over there.
That's awesome. Yeah, when I was abroad it was just like gen ed that I saved, so like there was a communication in Britain, like Britain in the modern era, so I just saved all my gen eds. I'm like, yes, I'll do that there. And then it was like a not a break from design, but it was just like another way to appreciate art in different ways. Went to so many museums, just even the architecture around, I feel like I definitely use that in my design now and the different colors and just the way of life. It's so laid back and so much different than America.
Totally.
Yeah, that was such a total tangent. So let's get back to you. So what's your story? You mentioned it a little bit, but I wanted to get more into about your what your 9-to-5 job was and then when you transitioned.
Yeah, so kind of like I mentioned, so throughout college, I had a couple of different internships, and one of them was actually for a place called Meredith Corporation, which was where I ended up working full-time after college. And so the cool thing was working there, I got to meet a bunch of different people, kind of make some connections, and I actually was approached about this job with Better Homes and Gardens magazine, which is through Meredith Corporation. And I was a senior in college at the time, it was second semester, and I ended up getting the job and then working part-time. I believe I started in like March and then went full-time in May after I graduated. So it was a nice transition period because I kind of got like a little taste of the real world without going like completely headfirst into it. Mm-hmm. And so while I was there, like at the time I thought it was my dream job because it was just something I'm also very passionate about interior design. So working for like a magazine that, you know, specializes in interiors was just like a perfect fit for me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, slowly after working there, I kind of realized like it wasn't quite as creative as I wanted it to be. And I was just confused. Like, is this what like I, you know, went to school for? Like, I just feel like I'm not really using like all the things that I learned. And mm-hmm. I wasn't, you know, feeling that passion that I thought I had for it. And so at that time, I started thinking about ways where I could eventually be my own boss. That was something that I was always very interested in, but I just was like, I had no idea how to get to that point. Mm-hmm. And so I was actually talking with a friend who also worked at Better Homes and Gardens magazine, and we ended up creating our own design company, which was called Flyover Design Co. And at first we kind of offered everything under the sun, all types of design stuff, but then like slowly found our niche in wedding paper goods. And so did that for several years. And while I was doing that, I also kind of realized like that wasn't going to be able to support me full time. So then I started Brighton Made, and then was able to leave my 9-to-5. So, and now I just solely focus on Brighton Made and not, the other company that I once started. But, looking back, it really helped me kind of like build up my clientele with Brighton Made and just like go through all the mistakes of like when you first start a business. And, it also helped me make that transition to be able to leave my 9-to-5.
Yeah. So around what time did you start Brighton Made? Like how long ago?
Yeah. So I started in April of 2017. And so I graduated in May of 2015. And then I started the first design company that fall. So like very shortly after I graduated.
Okay.
In 2015. And then yeah, brought on the second business a year and a half later. So yeah. And then I was able to leave my full-time job then in November of that year of 2017. So really only had Brighton Made for just, you know, 6 months or so before I was able to go off on my own.
Yeah, that's a lot happening in 2017.
Yes.
Would you recommend getting like the full-time job corporate experience prior to running your own business? Because that's kind of where I'm at. I'm like, I actually worked before COVID for a wedding stationery luxury design. So I would help with the consultations, and I would actually do some designing and working with the brides to develop their invitations. And it was a smaller business, like there were literally like 3 employees, and they would outsource a lot of things, and I enjoyed it, but there were a lot of constraints within designing an invitation, you know.
Totally.
The same information, same type of printing, people want certain things. So yes, I could use my creativity, but I just felt like I had a lot more in me that I wanted to, you know, do,
I guess. Totally. No, I think, I think you can go either way. It's hard to say because obviously I'm not looking for a job in the middle of a pandemic. So I'm sure now it's a little bit different than it was back in 2015. But I mean, I think having that corporate experience made me appreciate just like going off on my own. And it also kind of helped bridge that gap, because I think had I just gone straight, you know, from college to working for myself, like I would be completely lost on how to even make money. And for me, that wasn't really an option. Like I needed to be able to pay my bills. And so having that 9-to-5 gave me that stability and that time to build up my side hustles to a point where I could eventually financially afford to be on my own. But I think just starting off, I don't think I would have been able to do it.
Yeah, it probably would have been a lot more stressful knowing that that was your only
income
option.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah. I still have I'm graduating in May. So I have time. I don't have to like panic right now about which direction I want to go in. Cause I'm trying to just let whatever happen.
Totally.
I would love to work on my own, especially cause I feel like I'm kind of getting a bit of a jump start on it. And I'm really trying to learn as much as I can about the business. So that I'm not just like a lost fish, and like, what's that saying? I don't know the saying, but
yeah,
like, I'm just not like a lost puppy, like once yeah. I graduate, but just gonna take it as it goes. I definitely think working for a magazine or something like that, that you were actually interested in, mm-hmm. it wasn't like you're working in like pharmaceuticals.
Right. No. Yes, exactly.
So that also helps. I've seen so many graphic design jobs for like pharmaceuticals and I'm like, I'm sorry, but
I can't do it. No.
That's like being a robot and like a task rabbit and just creating the same thing over and over again.
Yep, totally. Yeah, I think it just depends. I mean, I think you could do it either way. And like I said, my situation was different. I mean, I was presented this job and at the time, like I figured I wouldn't work for myself until like way down the line when I had like kids and stuff. Like I didn't know what my career path looked like. So, but I think if you like, you know, are dead set on working for yourself, like you could totally make it happen. So.
Awesome. That is reassuring, a little clarifying, you know?
Yeah.
So what services do you offer now in your studio? And out of those, does one like fulfill you more or do they all fulfill you equally? You know, I guess that would be ideal, but.
Yeah. So, I would say, I mean, yes, they definitely all fulfill me. The main thing is that we don't work with any clients who we don't do the branding for. So essentially branding is like the entry point to working with us. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we'll do anything from website design to packaging to any sort of like print design or digital, social media stuff. But definitely branding is the entry point. And I mean, I love branding and to me, it's not fun to do web design or packaging for a brand that I didn't create. And so, I would definitely say it totally fulfills me on that end. Before when I first started, my company, just because I was looking for, you know, anyone who would pay me, I pretty much just, you know, I did web design, packaging anyone who needed anything. And so now, with it being very specific to working with brands that are in our style and brands that we actually created, I feel like the whole process is just very fulfilling. But yeah, you find what you like and what you're good at and, kind of run with it from there. Cause I think, you know, you'll quickly learn all of the work that you love to do and the work that you don't love to do.
Yeah. And that's a really good way of, I guess, like strategizing or just organizing your business, because I've been trying to brainstorm like how to put certain things on a website when I launch or what services to offer. And like, this has to go with this. Or, and it was like a huge like spider web of information. Mm-hmm. So, but everything leads back to branding.
Yes. So
that definitely makes sense. And I may like think about that down the line, because obviously I want just the client, you know?
Yes.
So if someone's like, can you like update my website? I'll be like, sure, I could also update your branding for you, but I can do that.
Yeah. But
that's really cool, because I went into school as like a print concentration. So like packaging, editorial, stuff like that. But I've been getting into web closer to graduating.
Yeah.
So I really want to do it all. Like I want to build a brand. I'm kind of doing that with myself, I guess. It's like a trial run. I don't know, with like my own website, my own business card. Yeah, I just feel like I want to do it all. And being able to like see you be able to like, you know, have all these different types of design. And it's not just branding, because you're doing the branding, but then you're like, you're implementing it.
Totally. Yes. Yes, definitely.
That just seems so, I don't know, just seems so exciting to like see it in person, or then to like just even use it on your phone or
right.
I don't know. This could be like a new designer. Like I'm fresh into the design world and everything's exciting, but I don't know. It just seems so fulfilling.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. We love being able to like, just not stop with just the branding. Like I love being able to like build it out beyond the branding. Cause I mean, the branding is definitely the most fun portion for me, but I also love like being able to see like what it would look like on a tangible package or on a website or on their Instagram feed. So yeah, we really enjoy that part of the process too, seeing it all come to life.
And regarding like print collateral and materials, do you outsource that with like you have a printer that you use? Like how does that work really?
Yeah. So, with my first company, because, Flyover Design Co, cause we were, you know, primarily focused on wedding stationery. We worked with a printer and did all of the outsourcing and, essentially like looked like the package was completely coming from us. And actually at one point we did buy a printer and use that in-house. But now with branding, just because now today, I feel like so often, a lot of times, my clients don't need a ton of print work done. So that is something that I kind of leave up to them. If it's something that they want my help on and my assistance with, then, you know, I am definitely happy to, you know, offer that as a service. But a lot of times I usually just leave it up to them and let them handle like the printer that they want to work with. Or, because a lot of times too, they'll maybe want to like work with a local printer just so they can actually see the tangible items in hand. Yeah. So it just kind of depends on the client, but I would say for the most part, I kind of leave that piece up to the client and we just focus on the design element of it.
And this is a more technical question, I guess, but from sending files from like the Adobe programs to printer, is there like a process that you use for that?
Yes.
Like for packaging?
So it depends. Yeah. It depends on if it's, you know, like printing like business cards versus, actual packaging files. So for packaging, we'll create those in Illustrator and usually just package up the file and make sure that like all of the fonts are outlined and then all of the colors are in the right format that they need to be in, and just like clean up the file and make sure that, you know, we follow the art guidelines and all of that that the manufacturer will provide you with. Okay. So yeah, we'll usually just package up the file and give that to them. And then as far as like if the client's going to print something on their own, I'll usually save it out a couple of different ways. Most of the time, the printer will need a PDF with crop and bleed marks. But I've also seen places online where they want like a JPEG or just a PDF without the crop marks. So we'll save it out a few different ways depending on the type of printer that they're working with.
All right, cool. I didn't know if like the printer gave you specs to follow. So that was just like a little, that's a question I just came up with now.
But yeah, no worries.
So you mentioned how, you know, you started your Instagram and you were able to do that. Was it like 6 months? Was Bright, when you said you started Bright in May, did that mean you started your company or you started like the Instagram account?
Both, I guess. So
okay, at the same time.
Yeah. So first with the first company, I always have to relate it back to that because I feel like that's so much of what led to what Bright in May is today. But we found a lot of our clients and brides specifically on Instagram just because that's where brides were hanging out. And so immediately my number one strategy when I created Bright in May was like, I have to have, you know, an Instagram account to build up and find clients. And at first it was just like, I could not find a single client to save my life on Instagram. Cause I was like, where are all the business owners at? You know, I wasn't used to, you know, targeting business owners in that way. And so I kind of had to get a little bit more creative and think of, you know, different strategies and ways to implement it. And also too, at the time, the algorithm was changing. And so it was no longer a super easy platform to use to build up your business. Like I felt like when there was no algorithm before, it was just so easy to get engagement and followers and all of that. And so now it's obviously much different, which is okay because I think it just makes us work in a little bit more of a creative way. But yeah, I think, you know, at first I had joined a few different business Facebook groups, which really helped because, you know, business owners were hanging on there and they would ask for recommendations for designers. And so I was able to kind of pitch myself online. And then I also just kept being consistent on Instagram because I think at first, you know, you assume that, oh, I posted, you know, for a week, I should get a client. And it's like, no, it's going to take a little bit more time than that. And so I just stayed consistent with it and I stayed really true to my style and was just very focused on, you know, promoting my work, but also promoting just like myself as a business and as a brand. And so that it wasn't just like, here's a bunch of design work, you know, follow me, but more so like gave actual, you know, practical, tangible tips for business owners, even if they weren't, you know, in the budget to hire me or whatever it might be, but still sharing the design work and then also, you know, sharing things about myself and, you know, tangible takeaways for them. But yeah, Instagram was a big, like it was slow to start, but once I was able to get some clients through there, it just like kept trickling in. And now it's, you know, my number one way where clients find me.
I guess that's like ideal because, you know, your account is just like an extension of you.
Yeah.
I feel that even just from talking with you and like you really are this like bright and bubbly person.
Yeah. And
your work definitely is the same. So when you use social media now to like attract your ideal clients, like I'm assuming they come to you now rather than the other way. But are there any other tips you have for using social media to attract clients, you know, when you're just starting out?
Totally. So yeah, like I said, being consistent about it. Another thing I would say is that I think a lot of designers tend to hide behind their work. They get a little bit nervous about showing their face or just like putting themselves out there. And that is like the biggest mistake because your clients are going to connect with you more than, you know, your work. Like people connect with people. And so I think oftentimes as designers, we can tend to forget that. We're like, well, my work's just not good enough. And it's like, no, you have to be a human. Like, remember at the end of the day, yeah. Like they're looking to hire another human and not just like this robot designer. And plus you don't want to work with clients like that anyways. So just remembering to, you know, show yourself, show your life, show your behind the scenes, like, and the things that, you know, go into the work that you create. I think that just can go so far more than just like the finished product, but actually like showing your clients and educating them on the actual like design process and yeah, just like making a real like human connection with them, I think can just go so far.
So I want to go back to talking about like how you built your, I guess, presence online after your first company. So when you were like fully on your own.
Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah. So, well, one of the things I'll say is that, so at first I had like my own personal Instagram account, and then I had, you know, the other business account. And so then when I decided I wanted to start Brighton Made, I was like, well, I can't create a third Instagram account. Like that's going to be a nightmare. So I ended up switching my personal over to Brighton Made. And that was actually one of the best decisions that I could have made because, for one, I already was sharing a little bit of design work on there. It was just more of like personal stuff. And two, it also was a reflection of me. And so I knew that I wanted the brand to still feel true to me and, true to myself. And the other thing is like when you have too many accounts that you're trying to manage, I think it can be overwhelming and you don't spend enough time then on your business account if you're always scrolling through your personal account. And you don't want to do that. You want to make sure that you're using, you know, your business account in as many ways as you can. And so that was something that we quickly noticed with our other companies, how we were just kind of neglecting that Instagram because we would both just use our personal ones. So switching to my personal to a business account, or sorry, I should say like not the actual business account, but just like making it my business instead of just me. I think that was really key. And then also to just like sharing my design and my style and more than just branding and web design and packaging, but through like my wardrobe or through my house or through other ways where I could just still showcase like my artistic side and my style without constantly promoting like my service, if that makes sense. So I think, you know, making sure that your content, like I was saying, like isn't just, you know, stuff to get people to hire you, but rather like really showing like, you know, just your own personal style. So another thing is that I just love to paint. Like that's not a service that I offer, but that's something that I'll sometimes, you know, show online. People like to see like other ways that you can be creative and they like to see other things that you're passionate about. And so if you can incorporate those and build up, you know, your personal brand in that way, I think that will help, you know, a ton. And also too, just like in your captions, like really being thoughtful about them. I think sometimes we can be lazy and just want to write like, oh, check out this cool mood board, or I loved this logo. And it's like, but people like they have no way to interact with that. And so you want to make your content engaging. So whether it's, you know, telling them a tangible tip and sharing like about maybe it's the difference between sans serif and serif, or picking a color palette, or how they can make their website more aesthetically pleasing through 5 steps, like giving them advice and also just sharing like tangible things that they can implement into their business like for free. I think it's just a really good reason why they would want to follow you, and you're not just like pushing your services down their throat, but instead you're like showing yourself as an expert. So I think that is super, super key. And also too, just like talking to them, like in a very casual way, like as you would talk to a friend. So you don't want to ever sound salesy. And I think the word salesy just makes everyone like, I don't know, squeal a little bit. It just is like icky. So you just want to make sure that like everything you're promoting and, you know, whatnot is just like feeling very organic, and it's not like you're like shoving your services down someone's throat, but rather, like I said, like giving them tangible tips and things and then promoting, you know?
Mm-hmm. So when you were developing like your website, would you go about that? Like, this is where people go for my business things. And then Instagram is where people go to follow my life, I guess. Is that how you viewed it, or?
No, I would say they're still like intertwined. So I would just, instead I would more so look at it as like a personal brand. So I am the owner of Brighton Made. And so therefore like, and it's a service-based business. So I want to make sure that people can connect with me, but at the same time, I still want them to hire me. However, you have to build in the know, like, and trust factor. Like that's rule number one of marketing, is that people buy from people that they know, like, and trust. So the reason why I'm sharing about myself, the reason why I'm telling you that I love the color pink or, you know, whatever it might be, is because then you know me and then you feel like you can trust me and then you want to hire me. Whereas if I was only showing my design work, that wouldn't, like, you wouldn't feel any sort of connection to that. So I think the goal is connection, and I still want my personality to be reflected on my website, because I still want to make sure that I'm only attracting the types of clients that I want to work with. So if my website was just very strictly business, very generic, then I would get tons of inquiries that weren't going to be a good fit for me. And I don't want that. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that it's people are like, oh my gosh, I'm obsessed with like her style. I'm obsessed with her. I want to hire her. Like that's the feeling that you want someone to have when they're on your website. So I think it's important that you build the brand across all the different platforms, not just Instagram.
Lots of, I'm like taking notes here. I don't know if you can tell, but so speaking of your website, I love it. It's like what I like, I don't know how to put it, because it's like what I envision for myself, but like not by copying or anything. It's just like a goal.
Yeah. So
do you have any tips for like, I guess maybe.
Here they come. They should stop soon. There we go.
It's all good. But if you have any tips of, I guess, maybe website formatting, like creating the where the wireframes or the process of, you know, leading someone to make that inquiry, you know, send that, or like email lists. I hear about that all the time. And I'm like, I feel like I have nothing to say in email as an email newsletter.
Yeah. So, I mean, with your website, obviously you want to try to get as much, oh my gosh, they opened my door. you want to try to get as much like traction as you can. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the big things that I also want to say, kind of going back to social media, is Pinterest. Yeah. So Pinterest is another tool that I use and that all designers need to be using, because every single client who is like ready to rebrand or have a logo design, where do they go to look for ideas? Pinterest. So you can link all of your work through there and it can push over to your website, which I think is really, really key. But I guess as far as just like the overall web design process, so I build a lot of my small business sites in Squarespace. If it's a product-based business, I'll build that in Shopify. And then if it is like a blogger who has a ton of content online, we'll usually go with WordPress. Mm-hmm. I've also dabbled in Showit, but I'm not a huge fan of it. However, some designers like it because you can do whatever you want. Like it's literally drag and drop, but it almost drives me nuts as a designer because I feel like I can't like make sure that things are aligned. Like they don't have like rulers.
Oh, it doesn't like.
No.
Alignment.
Yeah. It's just like, it's kind of like designing in a program that like you're not comfortable with. Like,
yeah.
Describe it in that sort of way. But the the plus side to show is obviously that there's like no coding required, which is, you know, nice because you don't want to have to think about that. But so for Squarespace, usually what I'll do is I will do a mock-up. I usually actually like to do them in InDesign because I love grids. And so it just helps me kind of like map everything out. I know other people use Illustrator. And then also Adobe XD is another one I'm actually trying to force myself to start using just because it's better for web stuff. Yeah, I've actually played around in it a little bit, but I'm just so comfortable with InDesign that I always just end up using InDesign.
That's true. It's probably faster too for you since you're more comfortable there and it's just...
Yeah, you just like kind of do what you're comfortable with. But I am, that is one of my goals to start using Adobe XD more just because I think it's also helpful for the client because you can do like more mock-ups and things. But anyways, so once the overall like design and layout is approved, then we'll actually go on and build it on the platform that they end up going with. But yeah, that's in a short summary, kind of the overall process. But I do think it's helpful to mock stuff up before you like go in and start trying to play around with layout because I think it's hard to like visualize how you want it to be. And then you end up doing it 1,000 times. So it's just easier if you just like design what you were thinking first.
Yeah. I always forget about that. Like whenever I think about web design, it's like, well, you do it in WordPress or you do it in Squarespace. It's like, well, no, you could take a step back and do like a mock-up or like the sketch, the mock-up or whatever. I view it as like a path maybe from like I have a marketing minor. So I was thinking of it as like, you're following a path and you want your customer to get to the end, which is like the conversion or signing up for emails or something like that. So you have like a email list? Like I've seen so many, cause I've been doing a lot of research on designers' websites and it always pops up like sign up for this newsletter. And I'm like, I feel like I have nothing to say. And I never thought of like starting a blog or anything.
But yeah, I don't think, so I do have an email list, but that was not something that I focused on until actually probably more this year. Like I always have had an opt-in on my website, but I've never really like heavily promoted it or anything like that. And I don't think you have to. I think email lists are great if you are selling a product or a course or something like that, but I don't think it's totally necessary for service-based businesses. So like if you're just simply trying to, you know, connect with clients, I wouldn't probably focus a lot of my energy on email list building. Just cause like I said, email lists are more for products, digital products, or, you know, courses, things like that, where you're going to be wanting to emailing them about like specials or sales or all that good stuff. Not to say you can't have an email list, but I don't think it's necessarily going to like get you more service-based clients. So yeah, I think that's kind of like, and it does seem very overwhelming, but honestly, once you start using them, they're not too bad to work with. I personally use Flowdesk. I've also worked with MailChimp before.
Okay. So I loved everything about talking about your journey and about the business side and, you know, growth. But now I want to talk about like your style and like the pretty stuff and how you describe your style. How do you set yourself apart? It's such, Instagram is saturated to begin with in whatever industry and whatever niche you have. So yeah, let's just talk about that, how you set yourself apart.
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing is really just trying to stay true to my style. So like, I think we all probably appreciate, or at least I do, I appreciate a lot of different design styles. Like I find a lot of, you know, good design, very aesthetically pleasing, but at the end of the day, like I still gravitate naturally towards, you know, a specific look. And so I really try to just like lean into that rather than trying to like force myself to be a designer that I'm not. Like maybe I'm just not great at like a classic style design. That's totally okay. You know, I naturally just have more of like a playful, artistic, organic feel to my work. And so I've really just leaned into that. And I think that helps really distinguish me in the field because it's true and it's specific to me. It's not me trying to replicate someone else's style. And I think with designers, you know, getting design crushes, you know, on people online, and it can be hard to be like, well, I want to look just like her work. And it can be challenging because you can't ever completely, you know, emulate someone else's work, rather like, but no one can completely take like what you have. So obviously easier said than done. And I think when you're first starting out, you want to explore a bunch of different styles. And that's totally what I did too. And then I kind of found like what I was good at and then, you know, stuck with that and slowly. And I would say even now, like I'm still refining my style. I think that's something that, you know, is you're always evolving with, just because otherwise like everyone's styles would be super outdated if we just all stayed the same. So yeah.
Yeah, that's so true. And I mean, I can see through your style, even like your background, it's so organic. It's so natural. So it's not like you're designing something cause it's a trend. It's like, no, it's literally your personality.
Yeah.
Just bring it into design. So I had like a mini like panic. I'm like, oh my God, am I design just like everybody else? Am I copying? I don't think I'm copying.
No.
So then I was like, you always see people posting like, oh, like stop copying, or this is a problem in the industry. And I'm like, I don't think I'm doing that. Right. Like, I think I'm good. So then I would take a break and I would be like, my friend, you look at this, tell me, what does this look like me? Like, if you could describe my work in 3 words, what would it be? And then I was able to reframe and get a better idea of how to connect it back to my personality or just confirm that it is me. Because I feel like we always get so lost in like the Instagram world, the Instagram mindset of social media, or at least I know I do.
Mm-hmm. But, no, it can be, and it's hard too. Like, I think, another good, like helpful thing, if you do feel like you're like, I'm like just looking at too many designers' work. And that was me at one point. I was just like, I just don't follow a ton of designers. Like, that's just something that I had decided that I don't want to like be constantly looking at and filling my headspace with, like, and I definitely do follow designers. Don't get me wrong, but I try to limit it in a sense where I'm not constantly looking at the work that I'm creating. Cause I don't want to ever accidentally like make a design off of something that I saw. Cause like, I think sometimes
you're subconscious.
You're just like scrolling through your feed. And if you're constantly ingesting like that content, I think, it can also make you compare yourself way too much. And I don't think that's healthy either. I think it's really like, I just do best when I don't worry about what other people are doing.
Exactly.
And so if you like find yourself doing that, like, I think it's super like healthy to like hide people or unfollow them and just kind of monitor and limit the number of, you know, other designers that you look at.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't even think of that. You know, I always think I'm like, oh, well, it's my problem. Like, I'm doing something wrong. And it's like, well, no, it could just be because you're on social media a lot. And that's just the world we live in.
Yeah.
Talking more about your design. So I've seen so much of like people making fonts from scratch. So do you use like an iPad for like your handwritten? It's so,
yeah.
Is that just like your handwriting?
Yeah. So, before I got my iPad, I would do everything like by hand, like pen to paper. And now I still sometimes do that depending on like the certain look that I want to get, just because like the iPad is amazing because it's obviously digital. So it's just faster to, translate, to the computer. But at the same time too, there is certain things with the iPad that it doesn't like fully recreate what it would be in person. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'll still create things by hand, but I use my iPad Pro with the Apple Pencil, and then I really like Procreate, and then I've also used Adobe Sketch, I believe it's called, or maybe it's just Sketch, something along those lines, but use both of those and just play around with, you know, different brushes, and you can also like create your own brushes in there, which is super cool. So yeah, I feel like you could get lost in both of those programs for days. So yeah, that has kind of been my hand lettering process for sure.
So what about like font manipulation in Illustrator? Like, if you say you get the license, like the commercial licensing for a font, and then you're like, but I don't like that. How do you go about that? Because I've tried looking at YouTube videos and honestly, it just seems super complicated and I just get overwhelmed and I'm like, I don't know. I just need to ask someone.
Yeah. So I would say like at first, like if I know for sure that I want like the typeface to be, let's say I want it to be sans serif. So first I'll start by researching a bunch of different sans serif typefaces, and I'll usually like put the test, whether I have the fonts on my computer or I'm just simply like testing it by like screenshotting it. And I'll put all of those together in an Illustrator file, and I'll probably do like 50 or so, maybe more, maybe less, depending on, you know, what it is. And then also like playing around with it in all uppercase, lowercase, letter spacing, all of that. And then once I kind of start to narrow it down, I usually will find like, ooh, I really like the E on this, but I hate the rest of the word. Or I really like how this curve is here. Like maybe I could do something like that. And so I'll maybe start with like a base font, but then I'll kind of tweak it by just like breaking apart the letter. The nice thing is too with Illustrator is I feel like it seems really complicated, but like using shapes and just like the Pathfinder tool, you can honestly break apart letters pretty easily. And then just kind of like manipulating them from there. But I think it's helpful to do a lot of font research beforehand, just because then you can kind of see like different parts of letters that you might like. Like I know there's like fonts that I will like be obsessed with in lowercase, but then I hate them in uppercase or vice versa. So you just kind of have to play around and see all the different options, because you just never know. And then also too, I think it's helpful to look at the glyphs, because a lot of times there'll be like different variations of a letter. And so that can also like completely change the game too.
Yeah. Do you have favorite like places that you look for fonts that you from?
So obviously Pinterest is a great search engine, but I also love Typewolf. I'm not sure if you've heard of that, but essentially they have different fonts. And the cool thing I like about Typewolf is that they'll show you fonts that are similar. So then I like to look at those ones as well. And then you start to just go down this like rabbit hole of fonts. I also like, it's called You Work For Them, I believe. And so they have a bunch of different fonts and things that I feel like are maybe not shown as frequently. Just getting lost. I feel like once I start searching for fonts, I somehow end up, yeah, like I said, down like this rabbit hole of, I end up on some other sort of like font like collective, and then it, you know, turns into something else. But usually those are like the go-to starting places. And then when I find like a font collective that I really like, I'll usually just bookmark it, and then I can always refer back to it too when I'm working on other projects.
Yeah. Okay. That's great to know, because, you know, in school, it's not that they don't teach you how to do that. It's just that they're like, well, don't worry about that now because you're not selling it. So you don't need to worry about the license.
Yes.
Like, just don't worry about it. And I'm like, but when should I worry about it? Like,
yeah, no, they didn't teach us any of that. I felt like they were mostly like, you should use Helvetica and Gotham, and like, that's it. I don't know. It was just very like, I don't know, fonts that I feel like are just have been around a while, and it wasn't as much of like exploring with typefaces for sure.
Yeah. So I also feel like your typefaces and your illustrations, I guess I would call it, like the patterns and textures you do, is that something that you have from like your designer like background that you learned in school, of like bringing that into a brand? I'm not sure if that makes any sense, but like, so generating like a pattern, is that in like your iPad, or like the textures making it look like it's like a stucco wall or something like that?
For sure. Yeah. So that also kind of goes back to the hand lettering process. So sometimes I'll like actually like paint something by hand, and other times I'll actually make it on my iPad. It just kind of depends on, obviously, like I said, the iPad is so much faster, but there's also like nothing that you can replicate like the real thing. So
yeah, that's true.
Pros and cons, but I feel like I first started getting really interested in incorporating artwork. Well, I always loved art like as a kid. And then all throughout high school, I took art classes. Like that was my entire schedule. And then in college, with my focus being in graphic design, like at first, I didn't really realize that I could like bring my artwork into like graphic design stuff. And then I think there was just like one project, like my sophomore year, where I brought watercolor into a book design that I did. And then I like fell in love with it. And I was like, I want to do that for all my projects. So, and then the teachers were like, you need to do something different. But, I was like, no, I can't help it. Like, I just love this style and this look. So yeah, that's something that I just kind of like slowly started incorporating. And now it's just, something that feels really true to my style.
I feel like that's so like interesting that you were like an art kid, you know, and then you went into graphic design. Cause I feel like a lot of people go into graphic design, they're like, cause I can't draw, But I'm still creative. Like, that's kind of like me. Like, I can't draw still life for like, I can't do it. But I can like sketch a hand if I really, really, really try, or I could do sketches like patterns or botanicals. Like, I could do that, but I can't make money off of just like drawing painting. No. So how do you go about like bringing the real thing into a program? Because I've been wanting to use watercolor so much, but like I find brushes online, but it's not like as real as I want it to look.
Yes.
So how do you go about making it look so real?
So I would say on the iPad, like, I mean, it's tricky. I don't think there's really a way to make it look more real other than just simply like by playing around. But obviously it looks most real when you do it by hand. And so when I do it by hand, when I scan it in, I usually just take a picture of it with my iPhone. Okay. And then I'll bring it into Photoshop and kind of clean it up and remove like the background if I need to, or kind of adjust it to make it look like realistic. But yeah, usually, you know, doing it by hand helps avoid it looking too fake, because I don't like that look either. But yeah, it can be it's just a little bit more of a tedious process, I would say, like doing it by hand and then bringing it into Photoshop. But it's worth it because I think it just looks better. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That's why I wanted to ask about it, because I was like, it just looks so real. It has to be real. And then, so that answered my curiosity. So another thing about your design I want to talk about was about the positivity that I feel like you show through your brand, whether that was on purpose or not. Like, obviously, like, bright and made, like, it's bright colors and you know, I just look at your page and it's just so happy. Is that intentional, or is that, that's just you? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, I don't know. It just kind of happened. Like, when I was first thinking of business names, I wanted it to play off of my name, but I didn't want it to be my name. So with my name being Brianna, or also people call me Brie, like that's the first three letters of Brighton. So my husband actually came up with the name Brighton Made, because it was reflective of my name, but then it was also like true about my design style, because I knew I liked bright thing, like positive things back then when I started it. And so it just seemed like a natural fit. And now it's just a really easy way for me to like infuse my personality into it. Cause you're right. Like, it does. It's just like a natural thing that I gravitate towards. Yeah. And I didn't even fully realize it at the time, but it's helpful that that's my name. So
that's such a fun story that like you have that connection to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We're coming closer to the end of the podcast. I know we're getting close to an hour, so I don't want to go too long, because I'm so busy. But I wanted to ask a few questions about, you know, maybe your favorite client management programs that you use, or any of your favorite resources that you think would be good for designers, whether that be books, podcasts, documentaries, or even just any other websites, like management systems, stuff like that.
For sure. So for client management systems, I use Dubsado. So I don't know if you've heard of that, but it's a great way to send invoices, proposals, contracts. I also do all of my client like questionnaires in there. So it's just a good system to use. I know some other designers use HoneyBook is another one. I played around a little bit in that, but I think it's more geared towards wedding professionals.
Okay.
And then I'm trying to think, another program that I haven't specifically used, but I know some designers use, is called Basecamp. And so that just hosts like all of like the client communication and whatnot. And as I've been growing my team, I've thought about doing something like that, but as of right now, I'm not. And then I also use Dropbox to, host all of my files. It's just an easy way for them to be like on my desktop, and also like for other people on my team to be able to access them, and also to send clients, you know, files and whatnot.
Space.
Yes. I'm trying to think what other platforms I use. So for bookkeeping, I use QuickBooks.
Okay.
I don't personally do my bookkeeping. I hire that out, but it is a good way just to keep all of your numbers organized. And obviously the Adobe Creative Suite is another big one. And then for my website, I already mentioned this, but Squarespace is what I use for that. And then I also use Flowdesk for email marketing. Yeah, I think that's pretty much. Oh, and I've dabbled in Asana for like keeping projects and things like organized, but I personally just like to do it more old school, and I actually have everything in my Google Calendar. It's just, I don't know, it's just easier for me, but just because they have like a tasks feature, so you can kind of see when everything's like
new
and happening. Yeah, so I personally like that, but you could do something similar in something like Asana if you were wanting that. But yeah, that's kind of what I use for most of the client and behind the scenes stuff. And then as far as like other resources and tools, so let's see here. I believe I mentioned Typewolf. Oh, Creative Market. So I don't know if you're familiar at all with that, but I know a lot of designers use that for finding like stock photography or mock-ups or things like that. And I would say another big tip is that while mock-ups are great and I use them for like presentations and stuff, I think for like things like social media, it's best if you can create your own mock-ups. Obviously it's more work, but I think it just looks more like natural and true to your style than if like you just like use like a mock-up that you bought. But obviously like everyone starts somewhere. And then let's see here, what else? So I also took this last spring, I took Design Biz Mastery. So that is a course with Morgan Rapp on value-based pricing. So if you're curious on value-based pricing or just like pricing yourself as a designer, I think that's a really great course to take. And then Abby with Wayfair Design Studio. Yes. I don't know if you've heard of her, but she sells a lot of really awesome templates and things. I personally haven't used any because I know a lot of the things that we probably both kind of use in our own templates, but I've heard a lot of really great things from other designers. And then another course that I took was called Branding with Brie, and that was by Rowan Maid, and that was a really great course just on like her whole branding process. So yeah, those are a few different courses and tips hopefully for designers.
Oh yeah, I'm interviewing Abby in a few weeks.
Oh awesome. Yeah. Oh, yeah,
I've been obsessed with her blog. I just reading everything.
So helpful.
Yeah, so it's so funny that you mentioned that. But I want to end off by asking you a question that some people are like, oof, but if you could tell yourself from 3 years ago a single piece of advice, what would it be?
Oh, so many things. I would say a couple of things. So first, kind of like what I've already talked about with just like staying true to your own like style and like not getting in your own head about things either. I think so often, especially when we just work for ourselves and like we don't have a team or, you know, anyone else to bounce ideas off of, we can oftentimes like really second guess ourselves. And like, you just try to stay confident. I know it can be scary, like putting yourself out there and you feel unsure about things, but I don't know. I just think just try to not get in your own head about stuff, and just stay true to like your own style. And then my second thing would be to build a team, like maybe even a little bit before you're ready. So I was so hesitant to bring people on to my team and I felt very overwhelmed for a very long time. And then finally this year, I slowly have started to build a team and it's totally changed my business like completely. And so I wish I would have done that a little bit sooner, just because I think I would have, you know, gotten even further in where I want to be had I done that. Because while I think in the beginning, like it's good to wear all the hats, I think, you know, if you want to grow and you want to scale, you have to be able to like step away from your computer at the end of the day and not be working 24/7. So yeah, that would be my advice.
I love it. So now you can, if you want to plug yourself away, I'm sure people listening here already know you, but you know, your website, it's your Pinterest as well. I think I already follow you on Pinterest because that's how I found your Instagram.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
That's like the pipeline that I follow.
Yeah. So I feel like so many people have told me that too, which is another reason why everyone needs to use Pinterest. Yes, everything is pretty much under Brighton Made. So Pinterest and Instagram. My website is brightonmade.com. And then also, if you are a fellow designer listening, I'm hoping to be launching a course for designers later this year. So be on the lookout for that. It's going to be specifically, excuse me, I cannot talk, geared towards Instagram and attracting clients through Instagram. And so if that's something that you struggle with or are just curious on how to kind of build up clientele through Instagram, yeah, be sure to check that out. And I have a link to the waitlist in my Instagram bio, but I can also share it with you too.
Okay, perfect. I can always add that into the description of this episode too.
Perfect. Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, thank you so much for chatting.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's so great to chat with you and just talk about all things design.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to follow the Dare to Design Instagram account for more content. It's at daretodesign.podcast. The link will also be in the description of this episode. Again, thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you later.